Imagine buying like a state-of-the-art multi-million-dollar vault, right?
Okay, I'm picturing it.
You move all your company's most sensitive intellectual property inside. And then you realize the manufacturer hard-coded the electronic lock to 1234.
Oh, man. Yeah, that is a nightmare scenario.
Right. But as of yesterday, June 19th, 2026, that is the literal reality for over 86,000 organizations globally.
It's just
It
staggering.
really is. And if you are sitting there listening to this, trying to secure your network, you already know that keeping up with the relentless pace of threat intelligence can feel entirely impossible.
Oh, absolutely. It is a constant battle against information overload. I mean, you get buried in the technical minutiae of hundreds of daily alerts. And it becomes incredibly difficult to step back and look at the actual, mechanical architecture of how you were being targeted.
Exactly. And that is why today we are doing a focused Cyber Mornings Daily Deep Dive. Our mission is to cut straight through the noise of this week's threat intelligence reports. We want to extract the practical mechanical impacts from the three biggest stories of the day.
And when you lay these three specific reports side by side, they map out a complete narrative arc.
They really do.
Yeah, we are going to trace the entire life cycle of a modern industrialized cyber attack. We will look at how threat actors are achieving initial access at a staggering scale,
Right.
and then how they have commercialized their delivery networks to distribute malware, and finally, how they are systematically assassinating enterprise security software once they establish a foothold.
Okay, let's start with that initial break-in, which brings us back to that vault analogy and our first story, which is Fortibleed.
Right, the Fortinet situation.
Yeah, this is a sweeping, fully automated campaign by Russian-speaking threat actors, and it has compromised 86,644 Fortinet internet-accessible devices.
It's a massive footprint.
It is. And I look at a number like that and immediately assume, well, we must be dealing with a highly sophisticated zero-day exploit that bypassed all known defenses.
You would think so, right? But the UK's National Cybersecurity Centre, the NCSC, they are tracking this as something much simpler.
Really?
Yeah, and frankly, much more insidious. It is literally just the automation of a very basic two-step approach targeting Fortinet firewalls and VPN gateways.
Okay, so what's step one?
Step one is just mass scanning the IPv4 space for remote login endpoints, and then feeding them through a bespoke tool that sprays them with known login and password combinations.
So they get inside. But they aren't detonating ransomware or stealing databases at that point, are they? Like they just sit there.
Exactly. They passively monitor the network traffic flowing through that compromised perimeter appliance.
Oh, wow.
They are specifically looking to scrape more valid credentials from the internal traffic, which they then use to, compromise deeper into the network or attack additional
It
appliances.
just becomes a self-sustaining loop of credential harvesting.
Precisely.
But just how widespread is this fallback to defaults? Because if they're spraying known combinations, I mean, they must be hitting a wall pretty quickly, considering how heavily the industry pushes password policies right now.
Well, you'd hope so, but the data from Socradar paints a very different picture of enterprise password hygiene.
Oh no. What did they find?
35% of the breached credentials in this campaign were just generic administrator accounts.
You have got to be kidding
I
me.
wish I was. And another 28.3% were built-in Fortinet system accounts.
Okay, let's unpack this. They are exploiting basic human laziness at scale. They are literally just trying admin and password 123 on the edge of enterprise
Yeah,
networks.
it's the 1234 vault lock all over again.
But wait, that still leaves roughly a third of the compromised accounts unaccounted for, right?
It does. 36.7% of the remaining breaches were organization-specific accounts, meaning actual employee logins.
Wait, so where are they getting those?
This indicates the threat actors are successfully weaponizing passwords from prior, completely unrelated data breaches.
Oh, because users simply never bothered to rotate their credentials.
Exactly. Hudson Rock noted this touches nearly every sector of the global economy. It's providing working logins for some of the largest enterprises on the planet.
I'm really struggling to understand the mechanics of how this is still happening on Fortinet devices specifically.
How do you mean?
Well, I thought Fortinet pushed a major update to their operating system to prevent this exact kind of mass harvesting, like by upgrading their encryption.
They did. They absolutely did. And this is where the technical nuance highlighted by Arctic Wolf is so critical.
Okay.
In newer versions of FortiOS, Fortinet introduced a much stronger password hashing algorithm called PBKDF2,
Right.
and this replaced the older, computationally weaker SHA 256 mechanism.
But if an organization upgrades their firewall to the new operating system, wouldn't the system just automatically upgrade the hashes for all the existing user accounts?
You have to consider the mechanics of cryptographic hashing. It is a one-way function. The system does not actually know the plain text password.
Oh, I see.
Right. Therefore, when you upgrade the firewall from an older version, the existing administrator passwords have to remain stored as those weaker SHA 256 hashes in the configuration file.
So they don't automatically convert.
Nope. The system can only upgrade the hash to PBKDF2 the next time that specific administrator types in their plain text password to log in.
Oh, that is a massive blind spot.
It really is.
Because if you have a legacy admin account, maybe an old IT contractor or a backup account that was set up 3 years ago and never logs in, it
Exactly.
is just sitting there in the config file with a weak lock on it, completely vulnerable,
Yeah.
even though the IT department thinks they are running the latest, most secure version of the software.
The NCSC strongly suspects attackers exploited this exact legacy hash issue. They pull the configuration file, easily crack the weak SHA 256 hashes offline, and just walk right in.
Wow. Okay, so the practical takeaway here is urgent for anyone listening.
Extremely urgent.
CISA is recommending that you immediately terminate all active SSL VPN and administrative sessions on these devices. You must force a password reset across the board to ensure that PBKDF2 hashing algorithm actually engages.
Yes, force rotation is the only way to be sure.
And obviously, implement phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication.
Because the perimeter of your network is bleeding right now, FortiBleed demonstrates how threat actors gather initial access by the tens of thousands.
But a stolen credential doesn't automatically drop a payload.
Yeah.
Right. Gaining access is just step one.
Exactly. They still need to deliver the goods.
Right. They need a distribution network to funnel their actual malware into those compromised environments without triggering standard enterprise firewalls. Which directly connects to our second story, the infrastructure of delivery.
We are looking at Operation Endgame here.
This is a huge win.
A massive coordinated disruption. Dutch, Canadian, German, and US law enforcement took down 106 servers and neutralized 14,971 WordPress sites.
That is a lot of sites.
Yeah, and they were all infected by a malware delivery framework called Sokolish, which is often tracked as fake updates.
Okay, but we are talking about highly advanced cyber criminal syndicates here.
Right.
So Golish is a known conduit for heavy hitters like Evil Corp, Lockbit, and Ransom Hub.
The biggest names in the game.
So why on earth do these elite ransomware groups care about nearly 15,000 random small-time WordPress sites? I mean, why target a local bakery's blog or a small-town school website?
Well, what's fascinating here is they do not care about the bakery at all.
Then what's the point?
They care about the traffic passing through it. This introduces the concept of a traffic distribution system, or TDS.
A TDS, okay.
Cybercriminals operate these systems almost exactly like commercial affiliate marketing networks. When an unsuspecting user visits that compromised bakery website, the attacker's hidden JavaScript profiles the visitor's machine.
Profiling them. What are they looking for when they profile the visitor?
The TDS checks the incoming IP address against known enterprise blocks. It checks the geographic location, the operating system, and the specific browser version.
Oh, so they're filtering.
Exactly. It is looking to see if the visitor matches the profile of a lucrative corporate target, and simultaneously checking to ensure the IP doesn't belong to a security researcher or, a sandbox environment.
So the TDS acts as a highly intelligent, automated routing funnel.
Precisely. If the visitor matches the target profile, the TDS intercepts the session, routing them away from the bakery site and pushing a tailored payload.
And what does that usually look like to the user?
Most commonly, this masquerades as a highly realistic prompt to update Google Chrome or Mozilla Firefox.
And if they don't match the profile?
If the visitor does not match the criteria, say, it's just a local resident looking for the bakery's hours, the TDS stays completely dormant. It just lets the normal website load, leaving everyone completely unaware.
I am still trying to wrap my head around how they managed to hijack that traffic without the bakery owner or the hosting provider noticing.
Because it's invisible.
But if they start replacing the bakery's homepage with fake Chrome updates, surely someone sounds the alarm, right?
Well, they rarely alter the main website content anymore. The Shadow Server Foundation published some truly fascinating research on a tactic Segolish uses called domain shadowing.
Domain shadowing.
Yeah. The attackers compromise the authoritative DNS provider, the actual registrar account for the legitimate domain.
Oh, wow.
Once inside the DNS settings, they quietly create dozens of subdomains underneath the main website.
It is like someone breaking into your house, not to steal your television, but to quietly build an entire underground casino in your basement, just so they can use your legitimate home address to fool the police.
That perfectly illustrates the evasion technique. They route their malicious command and control traffic through, say, update.localbakery.com.
Right.
They piggyback on the established positive reputation of the bakery's primary domain.
Sneaky.
When an enterprise firewall sees traffic going to a trusted 10-year-old local business domain, it often just lets it straight through.
The scale of this routing network is just incredible. Infoblox data revealed that approximately 55% of their cloud customers attempted to reach Segolish infrastructure this year.
More than half. It is hitting every single sector.
And Orange Cyber Defense noted that Segolish drops initial loaders like GoLoader, which then open the door for the actual devastating ransomware payloads.
Yeah, the practical impact for website owners is very clear here. You have to aggressively patch your content management systems and audit your DNS records for unauthorized subdomains.
And for the enterprise defenders listening,
the takeaway is shifting your mindset. You cannot defend against this by simply blocking static bad IP addresses anymore. You're fighting a dynamic, commercially operated routing network that uses the legitimate web as camouflage.
Right. So we have seen the automated break-in with FortiBleed.
Yeah.
We have traced the invisible delivery network with Segolish.
Yep.
The payload has successfully bypassed the firewall and landed on the target endpoint. Now it faces the ultimate hurdle, right? Fighting the victim's endpoint detection and response software.
The final stage of the life cycle. And the tools attackers use to win this fight are becoming highly specialized and, frankly, very centralized.
Which brings us to our third story. A ransomware as a service group known as the Gentlemen.
Right.
They are reportedly led by a 36-year-old Russian national named Alexander Yapayev. They emerged in March 2025, and their growth is staggering. They have already claimed 504 enterprise victims globally.
Their encryptor is fairly standard, actually, but their success stems from a mature portfolio of EDR terminating tools they provide to their affiliates.
ESET researchers recently tore down their primary framework, which they call Gentle Killer, right?
Yes, the Gentle Killer framework.
So what does this all mean? If ransomware is a bank robbery, most groups just sell their affiliates the vault cracking drill.
Right, the tools to do the job.
But the Gentlemen are providing an entire assassination toolkit. It is like supplying the getaway car, but also handing the driver a specialized military-grade device that actively seeks out and disables all the security cameras, the alarms, and the police radios in a 5-mile radius before the robbery even begins.
That's a great way to put it. Gentle Killer is designed to systematically hunt down and terminate 400 distinct processes associated with 48 different security programs from major vendors.
Unbelievable.
It is an absolute slaughterhouse for enterprise defenses.
Okay, I understand a piece of malware trying to delete files.
Yeah.
But how does it actually kill an EDR? The EDR runs at the absolute deepest level of the operating system to prevent exactly this kind of tampering.
You're talking about kernel-level access, or ring zero.
Right.
Security tools run in the kernel, so they have ultimate authority over the system. To kill those tools, the malware also needs to execute code inside the kernel.
But modern operating systems like Windows strictly require any code running at that level to carry a valid, trusted digital signature from a verified software vendor. They can't just bypass that.
Exactly. The attackers cannot just write their own malicious kernel driver because the operating system would immediately reject it for lacking that cryptographic signature.
So how are they getting into Ring Zero?
They use a technique called BYOVD, Bring Your Own Vulnerable Driver.
Ah.
The attackers scour the internet for legitimate, digitally signed drivers published by real companies that just happen to contain a known coding flaw.
A flaw that allows a user to read or write to kernel memory.
You got it. They drop this legitimate driver onto the victim's machine, load it, and then exploit its flaw to gain kernel privileges and blind the EDR.
The specific drivers they are abusing are wild. They aren't just hijacking obscure enterprise software.
Yeah, they'll use whatever works.
They are using vulnerable drivers from the Faceit anti-cheat gaming software, specifically a file called nsecurl.ses.
Yeah.
They use Valorant's game driver. They use another one called poisonx.ses.
And to make it even harder for defenders to spot, ESET noted they wrap their loader in an impersonation layer.
What does that do?
They copy fake cybersecurity vendor version information, steal digital signatures, and use legitimate-looking icons.
It's just so deceptive.
What makes the gentlemen so dangerous is their operational velocity. ESET highlighted their ability to take newly disclosed proof-of-concept exploits for these vulnerable drivers and integrate them into the Gentle Killer framework almost instantly.
Like how fast?
Sometimes within days of a vulnerability being published.
They are maintaining this framework like a commercial sauce product.
They really are. Historically, ransomware gangs left the incredibly difficult high-skill task of killing EDRs to their individual affiliates.
Because it's hard to do.
Very hard. But the gentleman centralizes this engineering effort. By offering a standardized plug-and-play EDR killer suite, they severely lower the barrier to entry.
Allowing low-skill criminals to deploy highly sophisticated kernel attacks against heavily defended enterprises.
Exactly. And the blast radius of this BYOVD tactic is expanding rapidly.
Oh, yeah. The CERT Coordination Center recently issued a major advisory warning that multiple vendor-signed UEFI applications are also vulnerable to secure boot bypass using these exact same attacks.
And that is terrifying. If an attacker leverages a vulnerable driver to exploit those UEFI applications, they can execute arbitrary malicious code during the early pre-boot phase.
Wait, before the OS even loads?
Yep. This happens before the operating system and its security tools even initialize.
It creates the ultimate blind spot. The EDR boots up completely unaware that the kernel beneath it has already been compromised.
Exactly. The practical takeaway for system administrators here requires proactive defense. You simply cannot assume your EDR will protect itself against a trusted signed driver anymore.
So what can you do?
You must aggressively apply updates to the UEFI forbidden signature database known as the DBX. You have to explicitly revoke the operating system's trust in these known vulnerable drivers before attackers can weaponize them on your network.
Okay, this has been intense. Let's quickly recap the three core takeaways from today's briefing for everyone listening.
Sounds good.
Number one, the edge of your network is your most critical vulnerability. You must patch perimeter devices like Fortinet, terminate old sessions, rotate credentials, and enforce strong hashing like PBKDF2 to halt automated initial access.
And number two, audit your delivery pipelines. Lock down your content management systems, check your DNS records for domain shattering, and recognize that you are fighting dynamic traffic distribution systems that use legitimate infrastructure to route payloads.
Finally, number three, protect your protectors. Constantly update your DBX to revoke trust in vulnerable drivers, because highly efficient groups like the gentlemen are mass distributing frameworks specifically engineered to assassinate your security software from inside the kernel.
Tracing the mechanics of these three stories, it leaves us with a rather profound architectural question.
Yeah.
We are watching threat actors leverage legitimate, cryptographically signed software, whether it is a bakery's domain reputation or a gaming vendor's kernel driver, to bypass our most advanced defenses.
Right.
If attackers can simply weaponize the very digital certificates that our operating systems rely on to establish trust, at what point does the fundamental concept of trusted software break down entirely?
Wow.
Are we approaching a threshold where operating system architecture needs a ground-up redesign, one where a vendor's digital signature means absolutely nothing?
It really forces you to wonder if the concept of implicit trust in digital certificates is already obsolete.
It's a scary thought.
We built the multi-million-dollar vault, but the attackers aren't picking the lock anymore. They're just walking through the front door wearing the vault manufacturer's uniform.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Stay curious, stay secure, and we will see you next time.